Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Paul Sperry, and he is the Washington Bureau Chief for WorldNetDaily.com. And, of course, we're going to be talking about his book, Crude Politics. Paul, thank you so much for being with us again.
My pleasure.
Now, I want to tell you that this is an entirely different audience than you've talked to before, so please don't feel that you have to say something different. I want to go over exactly the things we went over the other evening, because that was really a wonderful interview. In fact, that's going to be a tape of the month for Radio Liberty. I just think that there's so much you had to say, and hopefully everybody who listens to the interview is going to want to buy your book.
Outstanding.
So basically, of course, the book is subtitled How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about, of course, oil, and how, to make any sense of the administration's war strategy, you have to follow that oil, and it really is that simple, although how they've gone about it is quite complicated, as I detail in Crude Politics. I mean, the political and corporate connections alone are fascinating, and that's the main reason I wrote Crude Politics, is to let Americans see what the president and his advisors, many of whom work in the oil patch with him over the years, and right up until actually they were appointed in this administration, to the very day they were appointed, what they've been doing behind the scenes of the war. That's very important, because the public face of what's been going on is not entirely accurate, as well documented in this book. There's been a lot of other things, some might say shenanigans, going on behind the scenes of the war, while the president and other officials in the administration have said that they've been busy 24/7 running down Al-Qaeda, got them on the run, hunting them down one by one, et cetera, and asking for a patience, and getting, most of all, asking for a patience and getting the kingpin bin Laden, who's now reared his ugly head again, and it's now been confirmed finally by this administration that he is alive and well, and now he's in the Pakistani Badlands, hiding out there, and still a threat to America. But what they've been doing behind the scenes, Stan, is mainly busying themselves with a lot of oil deal making and contract work, putting together contracts and deals that had been sitting stagnant for a number of years because of UN sanctions in these countries where they've pretty successfully carried out exercise regime change, rather than narrowly targeting Al-Qaeda. And there's been, quite frankly, some war profiteering going on for their former clients and board members and donors, all in the name of fighting terrorism.
And I think that's really such a very, very important thing, is to understand, and as you listen to this program unfold, I think you'll understand that, as we often say at the beginning of our program, reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. That'll determine what the future will bring. We'll be right back here in just a moment with our special guest. And, of course, please hold your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our special guest this afternoon is Paul Sperry, and Paul Sperry is the Washington Bureau Chief for WorldNetDaily.com. We're going to be talking about his book, crude politics. And of course, that the basic theme of this book is that we're not getting the whole story. We're hearing, oh, we're really fighting terrorism. We, of course, went to war to fight terrorism. But right along, of course, with fighting terrorism, it would appear that, and of course, as Paul makes very clear in his book, 2 days after the attack on the World Trade Center, while of course they were the rubble was still burning and they were still searching for survivors in the World Trade Center, American diplomats were over in Pakistan working out a deal so that we could bring the pipeline down through Afghanistan and Pakistan, this pipeline that they'd wanted so long, so we could begin to harness the Caspian Sea oil. Would you like to sort of develop on that idea?
Sure. One slight correction is actually it was October 9th, 2 days after we started the bombing campaign in Afghanistan, but the significance still remains that the dust hadn't even settled yet at Ground Zero, and we were all still reeling from this horrible tragedy, and here they're busying themselves on this commercial front over in Pakistan. But just within days, though, of the attacks, a fellow by the name of Zalmay Khalilzad, who is a behind-the-scenes operator, very influential in this administration, but you know, not a household name. He's not someone who, he's a political appointee. He works in the White House, but he did not have to go through, they didn't put him in a position where he would have to go through Senate confirmation and have all his background and everything gone through, which is what they wanted to keep him out of that limelight. But this shadowy operator, Zalmay Khalilzad, was on the phone within days talking to his former contacts in Afghanistan. He's an Afghan native, a Muslim, a moderate Muslim, but a Muslim nonetheless. He was on the phone with the Northern Alliance, already figuring out ways to carry out regime change, topple the Taliban, and carry out his plan, which they basically dusted off and adopted. This is a plan that he had written before 9/11, which was to take out the Taliban, replace it by force using proxy forces in Afghanistan. And at the centerpiece of his plan was what he called a valuable energy corridor, which is what the whole plan was
hold that thought,
built just around.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our special guest is Paul Sperry, who's, of course, the Washington Bureau Chief for WorldNetDaily.com. And we're talking about, of course, how, of course, this gentleman, what is his name, Khalilzad?
Yes. Khalilzad. It's spelled K-H, but the proper way to pronounce it is Khalilzad.
Khalilzad. And, of course, he is, on the phone immediately after the September 11th attack, beginning to make plans for the attack on the Taliban. And, of course, one of the things that was really so interesting in your book, you pointed out that we were in negotiations with, of course, Sheikh Omar, who headed the Taliban, long before the September 11th attack. And they had made numerous offers to turn Osama bin Laden over to us. Before that, they wanted to turn him over to a third country where he could be tried. They wanted to get rid of him, and especially after July when Sheikh Omar heard that there was going to be a major attack on America, and he even told apparently some of our officials that Osama bin Laden was planning on, or at least that Al-Qaeda was planning a major attack. Is that correct?
That's right. And even before that, back in the 90s when Zalmay, we'll just call him Zal. He was a consultant for UNICAL, which originally proposed these massive multi-billion-dollar pipelines going through Afghanistan. I call him UNICAL Zal, Bush's pal UNICAL Zal. So we'll just call him Zal. Zal was meeting with UNICAL and the mullahs under Omar, Mullah Muhammad Omar, who was the head of the Taliban back in the 90s. And what they originally tried to do was the Pygmalion treatment on these mullahs, these troglodytes, and they would wine and dine them and try and show that, you know, you need to westernize a little bit so we can lift those sanctions on you, on your human, you have a horrible human rights record, treatment of women, blah blah blah. It's just awful. Also, you've got ties to terrorism, and we need to get these sanctions lifted before we can get international financing to develop these pipelines. And the Taliban weren't even really aboard the pipelines. You know, they're back in the Stone Age. They don't really care about that much anyways. They care about Islamic law and their religion. But anyways, they tried that approach. It didn't work. And they said, well, okay, let's, especially after 98, after Clinton lobbed some cruise missiles over there after the embassy bombings, they said, that's it. You know, we got to switch to plan B here and work on replacing this bunch. They go way back with Omar, as soon as the Taliban was toppled, and they followed this fellow's plan to the letter. I mean, even down to installing him. He actually recommended installing himself as special envoy to Afghanistan, and Bush complied, and he was the person who helped groom Hamid Karzai to replace Omar at the helm there in Kabul. And Hamid Karzai, it turns out from my investigation, not only worked for UNICAL, but was lobbying for these pipelines back in the 90s. He was making many trips to Washington, my INS records reveal. And he was a Washington insider. This guy was not plucked from obscurity, as the tale that the administration has spun to us. He was actually a fellow that they had long wanted in there, and they got him. And as soon as he was installed there, lo and behold, within weeks, he's signing a deal with Pakistani President Musharraf. It's called a Memorandum of Agreement and or Understanding, and to get these pipelines through, coming from the Caspian Sea and using Afghanistan and Pakistan as a bridge out to very profitable Asian markets, which they hadn't had that opportunity before because essentially the Taliban was blocking development of those pipelines.
So we were really basically looking for an excuse to take the Taliban out so we could put in the pipelines, and 9/11 was a very convenient excuse.
That's a very poignant way to put it. It was a very convenient excuse. It was a golden opportunity. I have no evidence that they knew the attacks were going to happen. They let them happen anyway, or that it provoked the attacks to provide a pretext for getting these deals through. I can't even, my most cynical mind could never imagine that they would do that, but what they had was a golden opportunity that they saw when they gathered around all these oil principals who became war principals, gathered around in the Situation Room, and they said, let's get bin Laden and let's get our oil deals and open up these oil frontiers that our former clients and board members and oil donors, quite frankly, have been clamoring for years. And they had a dual strategy. One was to get bin Laden, the other to get their oil deals. And unfortunately, it looks like so far we've only been getting the oil deals, and bin Laden has slipped out the back door in Afghanistan and gone into Pakistan. And now the president has left it up to basically farmed out the hunt for him to the Pakistani military, just like he farmed out the hunt in Afghanistan for bin Laden to the local Afghan Muslims who betrayed us and helped actually escort him across the border into Pakistan, much to the dismay and consternation of a number of military sources, both at CENTCOM and the Pentagon, that I have, that complained about this very odd strategy of a broad-based regime change focusing on the Taliban, primarily in the north, and not putting any boots in the ground in the south to seal off those escape routes to Pakistan and close in on bin Laden and the other al-Qaeda leaders in southern Afghanistan, first in Kandahar, where we had signals intelligence on them, and then in Tora Bora. Keep in mind, back then, bin Laden was still using a satellite phone, and we could track him through electronic intercepts, and he no longer does anymore. We really don't, we can't pinpoint him now, but we have a general vicinity in the Pashtun tribal belt of Pakistan where we have a lot of anecdotal information from intelligence, human intelligence, that he's there. And, boy, we're just not really doing much at all to find him.
Well, you know, it's
this is the guy who gives the orders for the major attacks, and we're leaving up to the Pakistani military, which really reveres him and doesn't have much incentive at all to ferret him out. Meanwhile, the president is talking about more money for Iraq, and really devoting and diverting a lot of resources still to Iraq. That conflict that he started in the middle of the war in Al Qaeda, and really only a pittance by comparison of that money he's asked, that $87 billion, is earmarked for Afghanistan operations, and that's really where it should be designated, devoted to. And unfortunately, the president has got the country wrapped up in Iraq, and Al Qaeda was not there, the base was not there, Bin Laden is not there, the Al Qaeda leadership is not there, and the ties that he's claimed between Iraq and the Baghdad regime and Al Qaeda are tenuous at best, as it turns out. And of course, now we have no weapons of mass destruction that he could have Saddam Hussein could have shared with Al Qaeda, even if he was in bed with him or with Bin Laden. So that whole thing, that whole case, is unraveling of the Iraqi direct imminent threat to America, and that's really unfortunate because of those resources that have been diverted to that Iraqi front in the form of troops and intelligence assets and Arabic translators, which are so key to gathering human intelligence to capture Bin Laden, and also, quite frankly, money, like I mentioned before. And by the way, my sources here in the administration and then among the Beltway bandits, as they call them here, these are the big contractors that make their money from the government here in Washington. About a quarter of that $87 billion, they tell me $21 billion of it is going to go to Iraqi reconstruction contracts. That's going to go...
Halliburton, Bechtel, yes. Flora, all of the George Bush's contributors.
That's right. And taxpayers will foot that bill. And that's... A bit disturbing, to say the least, especially in light of the fact that we already have $7 billion designated for Halliburton over 5 years. That's what their contract.
Of course, Halliburton is the corporation that Dick Cheney was the CEO of for 8 years while he was out of office, and my understanding is still getting a deferred salary, whatever that means. Isn't that a conflict of interest?
He's not necessarily drawing a fresh salary. He's deferring a lump sum payment that he was promised when he left. For tax reasons, he's getting it spread out up to $1 million a year. But he has retained stock options with Halliburton worth some $8 million. So he still has a fiduciary interest in seeing that Halliburton continues to get big revenues and profits.
Isn't Halliburton getting non-bid contracts? In other words, instead of competitive bids, we'll just give it to Halliburton because they're the only people, that have such high contacts?
That's right. It's a sole source. That's a very good point. There is no bidding. There is no competitive bidding when Halliburton... Keep in mind, this is not... $1.7 billion of it has already been paid out to Halliburton, and we still don't even know what work they've done. But this contract calls for up to $7 billion over 5 years for Halliburton. No bidding. No one else competed for that plum contract. And, the Halliburton is an oil field services company, and Cheney was the CEO of it in the 90s. And there's a lot more there to it, too. I hear the music going. I can go into it.
Well, we'll go into more of that when we get back. But
sure.
These people give incest a bad name, and I expect corruption from the Clinton administration. I'm very, very disappointed when I see the same corruption within the Republican administration. Now, maybe it doesn't make an awful lot of difference. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
All hard-4 tape set on the JFK assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. By the time you reach the retirement years, the average American will be taking 7 different prescription medications. Wouldn't it be nice to stay healthy and avoid taking all those pills? One unusual molecule has been shown to be effective in maintaining health, allicin, the active ingredient in fresh garlic. You won't find much allicin in regular store-bought garlic pills, but you will in Alimax, the only 100% pure allicin garlic extract now being imported from Britain. Call 866-405-4000 to learn more about Alimax. That's 866-405-4000. Alimax.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention to you the big Berkey fillers, the Berkey light fillers. We carry them here. Certainly, these are wonderful water fillers. If you don't like the taste of your water, it's got too much chlorine in it. If you're worried that it may have fluoride, this will take the fluoride out. You have to have a special post filter to do that, however. The big Berkey fillers are stainless steel. They're standard design. They've been used for 150 years. They have ceramic filters that, of course, are packed with activated carbon, and they'll take out the bacteria and the cryptosporidium. They'll take out many of the heavy metals. They'll take out a lot of the chlorine. They'll take out many of the pesticides and herbicides and insecticides. They do a great job of filtering the water for you. And of course, 2.5 gallons goes in the top, comes out the bottom. And of course, you've got nice tasting water. And of course, they're portable. You can take them any place. The Big Berkey is $239 plus $10 shipping. It's available in every state except for California and Ireland. You can get the Berkey Light in every state but Iowa, and of course this is made of Lexan. It's transparent. It's what you make bulletproof glass out of. The filters are even more efficient. They're called Black Berkey. There are only 2 of them, but they do a great job. They're a little slower than the ceramic filters. They filter a lot better, but they have to be replaced every 2 to 4 years. If you have fluoride or arsenic or MTBE, of course, you can put the post filters on the bottom. The Black Berkey filters will take out the MTBE. The ceramic filters will not necessarily take them out, but, of course, the post filters will. The Berkey Light, and, of course, if you want to get the lights on it, that's an extra $60. But if you want to get the straight one, which we have, it's $199. And, of course, you can get this by calling 1-800-544-8927. They're wonderful to have in case there's an emergency. They're wonderful to have just as a backup for your water system. If you're concerned about water contamination, go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can see them, and then give us a call here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, of course, is Paul Sperry. We're talking about his book, Crude Politics. And if you're interested in getting it, we're going to carry it. It's a very, very important book. And of course, we were talking a little bit about Halliburton. We're talking about how, of course, Dick Cheney was into oil. Condoleezza Rice, the National Security Advisor, was part of Chevron Oil Company, Chevron Texaco. They even named certainly a tanker after her. We see very, very strong ties of the Bush administration to big oil, including the Bush family. So why don't you pick up the story from there, Paul?
Sure. You're mentioning there's not much difference between the administrations, where you saw a lot of corruption, as you called it, in the Clinton administration in terms of collusion with donors, corporate donors and everything, in terms of policy, even foreign companies such as Lippo, which does business in Beijing. At the time, I called that crony capitalism, and I would say that this is the same type of thing. The only difference being that now we're at war, and this administration is using troops to bring about their commercial deals and secure their commercial interests, at the same time trying to secure American security. And, of course, taxpayers are picking up the bill for these big contracts, these war contracts. Another thing that's interesting in this Halliburton contract, which, is again, is $7 billion over 5 years. And, by the way, they will the Pentagon will not release, under FOIA requests, they're claiming national security interests.
No, we don't want Bin Laden to find out. Is that it?
Yeah, exactly. There's all sorts of emails and the whole negotiating, all the documentation we cannot see, and boy, that is something the public needs to see, because this no-bid contract was awarded, the initial contract, Stan, was awarded before the war ever started, and then it's grown and grown up to $7 billion over 5 years, like I said, and we still don't know what that entails, what type of work Halliburton's to do. We also know that Cheney's Secret Energy Task Force was studying maps of Iraqi oil fields before September 11th, but invading Iraq had nothing to do with oil, according to this administration. We need to say that over and over. This administration has said invading Iraq had nothing to do with oil. But as we know, Cheney has retained stock options worth some $8 million in Halliburton. And one of Halliburton's directors, Lawrence Eagleburger, many of your listeners might recall, he was the former Secretary of State under the first Bush administration. He's an old Bushian. He was all over the networks, pushing, primarily Fox, pushing for war in Iraq before the invasion. Another Halliburton board member, Kenneth Durr, was chomping at the bit to gain access to Iraq's prized oil field as CEO of Chevron. Now, that's Condoleezza Rice's old firm, as you mentioned. But the Gulf War sanctions from the first Gulf War locked Chevron and other U.S. producers out of the oil market in Iraq. But no more. Those U.N. sanctions on oil investment have been lifted, just like in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Azerbaijan, as I document in Crude Politics, all in the name of fighting the war on terrorism. This has all been quietly done behind the scenes. It's very complicated how they've gone about it, and the connections are very intricate. I won't go into that, but let me finish with Iraq. Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. There's a lot of it, but it's also cheap to produce. That's key. The crude is buried right below the surface, making drilling extremely easy, and it costs, on average, just $1 a barrel to produce. That's 10 times cheaper than in the U.S. on average. And on top of that, it's sweet crude, which means it has a low sulfur content, making it cheaper to refine for downstream products. And also, we need to say that the first thing that our Marines secured under orders from this administration was the prize from all oil fields in southern Iraq. And the first building they secured in Baghdad was the oil ministry.
Well, of course, it had nothing to do with oil. We want the American people to know that.
There's nothing to do with oil. Right. Invading Iraq had nothing to do with oil. We need to say that. And the puppet that they groomed to replace Saddam is related to the former deputy oil minister of Iraq.
And that's Shalabi?
That's Ahmad Shalabi, who advocates privatizing the Iraq National Oil Company and opening up that investment to U.S. producers. And now he's now acting president of the Iraqi Governing Council, but invading Iraq had nothing to do with oil.
And of course, that was the council that we appointed to represent the Iraqi people. What's this about democracy? I mean, when we appoint the leaders, that doesn't sound very democratic to me.
No, they don't have a say. It's just the same type of rigging of a democratic. We're calling it democracy in action, but it's a rigging of the system. To install our puppet just like we did in Kabul with Karzai.
Hold the thought.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention Miracle 2 soap products. And, of course, I never thought I'd be selling soap on the radio when I was leaving my orthopedic practice. But this is really a remarkable product. We've actually used it here, my wife and myself, for about 6 months before we decided actually to carry it. And I will tell you that some of the most amazing stories we have with people with chronic rash or acne, and we can't make any medical claims. We can only tell you what our listeners have told us that these things will do for them. And of course, there's a soap, and there is a moisturizing soap, and there is a neutralizer, which is a very alkaline mineralized solution that some people take for heartburn, and I know my wife takes it for heartburn, and she gets by pretty well. Occasionally she has to take some of these really expensive pills, but she does pretty well most of the time. And then of course there is a lotion and a gel, and the gel is what people use on their acne or rashes. All I can do is suggest you try them and see if they'll help you. You get them by calling 1-800-5-448-927. If you want more information, go to our website. And then, of course, we also carry Phenopoly, a wonderful program that will teach you and your children and your grandchildren how to read phonetically, how to spell phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically. And, of course, if you want to get Phenopoly, it's $139.95. Most of these programs are $200, $300, $500. And, of course, this is 5 board games, 2 bonus games, a couple of books that we throw in to explain how they have deliberately dumbed down the children of America by teaching them a means of reading that they knew wouldn't work. But, of course, you don't want very smart people when you're planning on changing the structure of our society from a free to a regulated or regimented or fascist society. I mean, slaves, you don't want them too well educated. They might revolt. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, our special guest this afternoon is Paul Sperry, and of course we're talking about the incest that exists and how so much of this has to do with oil. Now, of course, when we went into Afghanistan, we went in there to get Osama bin Laden. The trouble is, we, of course, did not go after Osama bin Laden. We went after the Taliban. And, of course, Osama bin Laden is in Pakistan. We've given Musharraf about $3 billion. He's the president. Well, he's the dictator. He's actually, if we want to be real, he's the dictator we have keeping in power in Pakistan. But he just can't seem to find Osama bin Laden because he wouldn't want to offend any of the tribal leaders there by going in and try to ferret him out. And our Marines, our special forces, are not allowed to step across the border to get this arch fiend who's responsible for the whole world al-Qaeda movement. Instead of cutting off the head off the serpent, we seem to have preserved the head while we're, of course, chopping the serpent up a little at a time. Would that be a fair statement?
That's right. And, to be fair, the president has said we've gotten over half of the al-Qaeda, his lieutenants and other senior operatives in his network, but the FBI counterterrorism agents who tracked bin Laden throughout the last decade through all these other attacks have told me that, look, it's key. We can't claim victory till we get bin Laden, and we can't get from under this threat from al-Qaeda till we get him, because he is the ethos and the inspiration of all these suicidal nuts that follow him. He has the respect like no one else does in that organization that can come up and replace him. Even Dr. Zawahiri, who is his spiritual advisor and tactical advisor, the number two guy, doesn't have as much respect as bin Laden. And bin Laden is the one, they tell me, that gives the orders for these major attacks on the U.S. and U.S. interest abroad and the major attacks. And he is the one who activates the sleeper cells. So in other words, we have to decapitate the Al-Qaeda leadership. It's imperative we do it. I mean, yesterday we should have done it. Back in 2001, we should have done it when we had a golden opportunity and a rare beat on bin Laden where he was. And we had that operation going there into Afghanistan. But the strategy was to focus on regime change rather than narrowly targeting bin Laden, unfortunately. And, you know, we have to kill the head, but we're not going to kill the body of followers. As Bush says, we're picking them off one by one, whatever. But they're a dime a dozen. I mean, this guy has got so much respect throughout the Islamic world. Recruiting is very easy, especially just showing those September 11th tapes for recruitment video. You know, this guy's the real deal to them, and he's the one that gives the orders. You gotta kill the head if you're gonna kill the body of followers. Well, is their point, and a lot of people don't. Understand that. They think, well, you just keep getting these operational guys and you know, then that's bin Laden's just a figurehead. Well, no, he's not. This is not Al-Qaeda isn't a physical base. It's a spiritual base, and he is the head of that. He represents Al-Qaeda. Bin Laden is Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda is bin Laden. You got to take the guy out, and you got to do it soon before he can initiate another attack that's in the pipeline already.
And, of course, the thing that really disturbed me, we've interviewed Robert Menager in his book, Losing Bin Laden. He points out that there were 11 opportunities to take out bin Laden. Sudan offered him on a platter to us. We wouldn't take him. And repeatedly we had the opportunity, and there was always an excuse not to get him. And then, of course, when we had him there in Afghanistan, we didn't take him. And of course, what's happening, my impression, is that more and more people are joining Al-Qaeda because, of course, we are looked upon as the crusaders in Iraq. We are, of course, are violating their holy land, and this is their religion. This is their very essence of their being, and they're shifting from the moderate Islamic belief into this radical Islamic belief, where, of course, the only way they can be sure to go to heaven is to die killing the infidels. And we're actually, what we're doing seems to be like poking a stick at a rattlesnake and then be surprised when he strikes back.
Oh yeah, there will be a blowback from this occupation of these Muslim countries rather than going in and decapitating Al-Qaeda and then getting out and really shoring up security in the U.S. What we've done is these full-scale invasion and occupation regime change. We're going to be there for years and years to come to protect the oil assets and the oil investments now in Afghanistan and Iraq. And, I don't let Clinton off the hook in crude politics. He did ignore Osama bin Laden for a number of years and treated that like some type of, like a bank robber or a criminal prosecution rather than an intelligence issue or a terrorism issue. In fact, I reveal how, in crude politics, I reveal how he refused to pull the trigger on Osama even after the USS Cole bombing. I quote a senior Pentagon official who worked on this operation to take him out, and they actually had him. They had a description of him. They knew it was him, the 6'5" guy. They came in with optic sensors, and they knew it was his. Had his face. They had people in position to take him out, and Clinton refused to give the green light because he feared that some local civilians might be killed in the process. But the difference is, Dan, Clinton did not have a national mandate to go to war against Al-Qaeda. Now, after the USS Cole bombing, some might argue that, this was an act of war against a U.S. military asset. Clinton should have, done something like declare war on Al-Qaeda, and I would argue that he should have, but we hadn't yet been attacked in the continental U.S. on our soil. And the entire American, the public, the American people said, look, you have a national mandate as Commander-in-Chief, Mr. President Bush, to go to war against Al-Qaeda and use all you can to take him out, and we'll be behind you, and no more messing around. Get him. But Bush have that mandate, but yet he's focused instead on regime change and oil contracts, and that's he's taken his eye off the ball. And you know, basically, we blew it back in 2001 by freighting the original mission with all this complicated things like regime change and proxy forces and nation building and getting these pipelines through, which, by the way, Bush has personally gotten involved in. But I wanted to pick up again with the Iraq angle and Cheney and Halliburton, because it's a lot messier than and more involved than people think. This guy Chalabi that Zal Khalilzad is installing there behind the scenes to replace Saddam Hussein, who's, by the way, I'll say again, he goes way back to the oil ministry in Iraq. He's for opening up investment to the U.S. producers, privatizing the Iraqi national oil company, all of the things that the principals in the Bush administration have sought, and their clients and board members and donors have sought. Cheney, a lot of people don't know this, Vice President Cheney, when he was still at the helm of Halliburton, this is in 2000, before Bush tapped him as vice president, he met with Chalabi in Colorado. What they talked about, we don't know. But Cheney was dealing with Chalabi. Chalabi's main interest was, you know, overthrowing Saddam Hussein and getting in there. You know, this guy's got all sorts of money contacts in London and Washington. But the official that Bush put in charge of grooming Chalabi to replace Saddam Hussein is the same fellow I talked about earlier, Zal Khalilzad, who testified with Chalabi, it turns out, 5 years ago about overthrowing Saddam. And the committee they testified in front of was none other than Senator Sam Brownback's committee. Senator Brownback takes more campaign money from the oil and gas industry than any other lawmaker. Brownback also hosted Zalmay Khalilzad when he was lobbying for the Trans-Afghanistan pipelines and replacing the Taliban to clear the path for those pipelines, which, by the way, are now on the fast track to development, unlike the hunt for bin Laden. So you have a nice little nexus there with Brownback, not only with the original Afghan plan, but also for this Iraq plan. And the Pentagon flew Chalabi into Iraq during the war. So he was preordained, just as they did Hamid Karzai. One more indication he was preordained, just as they did Hamid Karzai in Kabul when they were installing him as head of our client government there. And Karzai, just like Chalabi, has ties to the oil industry. And this is a redux or a mirror play out of what's happening in Iraq is what happened in terms of regime change in Iraq. These were plans that were in place before these operations, and this administration used 9/11 to dust them off.
Well,
in effect.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, I have heard from other sources that we are sending over civilian administrators to help, you know, of course, rebuild this country with five-year contracts. Have you heard anything like that, that we're planning on being there a much longer time than they're telling the American people?
One of my sources is in CENTCOM Intelligence, and he was actually he worked on both the Afghanistan side and the Iraq operations. And he told me that the go-ahead, the plans were approved by the president for Iraq in August of 2002. And there was a number of false starts because they were trying to get the UN on board, and President Bush couldn't sell the war to the UN Security Council. And at that time, the original plans called for a 10-year occupation of Iraq.
A 10-year occupation. See, they haven't told the American people that.
No, they have not told the American people. So, I mean, this is all stuff that they say, you know, they can't talk about because it's classified, and, you know. Are written plans. There are written plans, and they're on computer disks. And this is stuff that they claim is national security stuff, but the lion's share of this money to taxpayer money is going to contracts, and these donors are getting very fat on the taxpayer's nickel. In the same time, this administration, these crony capitalists, as I call them, are using U.S. troops, these young kids, as pawns in their game. And that is inexcusable. That's the height of cynicism to say that we're using them to secure this country and protect this country when we know darn well now that we were sold a bill of goods on the alleged threat from Iraq and Saddam's regime directly to America. That is all unraveling before our eyes now. And unfortunately, the free press wasn't very free during that build-up and run-up to the Iraq War, and they put out the White House's warcraft propaganda unfiltered. They didn't filter it. They weren't skeptical. They didn't ask questions. It's really no excuse that, as some say now, that, well, there was such a patriotic fervor in the country after 9/11. We didn't want to look like, we were unpatriotic or not supporting and rallying behind the commander-in-chief. Well, doggone it, even in war, the press has to still have a jaded eye. These are still elected officials, and as we see, they carry out hidden agendas, even after horrible tragedies, and exploit those tragedies for commercial gain or to give payback to donors. We should always be vigilant in the Fourth Estate. I mean, look, this president has control of three branches of government now. I think it was Lord Acton who said, power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. This president, technically, he has absolute power. That's what happened with the Iraq War. He felt that, they could fudge the intelligence and even fabricate things and get away with it. I think that they felt that it was easier to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission. And that's what they did. They just went in, and now they're not even really begging for forgiveness now. As we have a story up in World in the Daily today, that the three major officials in the Bush administration, Wolfowitz, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, have now, all in the last week, backtracked from alarming claims they made about the Iraqi threat, and their excuses that they misspoke. Well, they didn't intentionally mean to mislead the public, that they misspoke. These are folks that carefully choose their words, first of all, and if they're misspeaking about something as important as intelligence for starting a war, let alone going to war after we've been provoked or attacked, which wasn't the case with Iraq. We were starting a war, an invasion and an occupation. These guys, should they be even dog catchers? If they can't speak accurately when they're trying to sell a case for starting a war to the American people, are they even qualified to be dog catchers, let alone head of the largest government in the world in talking about intelligence in a war? I mean, this is quite disturbing.
Well, let me just
suggest, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Let me just suggest to our listeners, go to worldnetdaily.com, worldnetdaily.com, pull down that article. I read it. Great article. Did you write that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, it was a great article. I really didn't look at the byline, but we're so fortunate that Joe Farah has you and other people bringing the information that you're not going to get to the regular channels to our listeners. And so there's certain places, if you have a computer, you go every day, you go to worldnetdaily.com and see what they're writing about. That's the first thing you do in the morning. Well, we're just about out of time. What are the other things you'd like to tell our listeners? We've got about 2 minutes before we have to let you go.
The Saudis. There's the case for regime change. If there's a case for regime change, it was in Saudi, and it still is.
And they've actually been funding this whole thing all along, haven't they?
Not only funneling money through charities, the laundering at Al-Qaeda, which, you know, that's something that, you know, you really have to dissect. And but although there's a lot of smoke there, but actually there are Saudi officials who are indirectly through handlers, sponsors, and bagmen financed directly at least two of the Saudi hijackers. And that's in those 28 pages that the president refuses to turn over. He's blacked them out in the Congressional 9/11 report, which was supposed to be, you know, that all Americans were supposed to be able to see that. But he selectively took 28 pages out of it, and that's what those 28 pages are about, is the complicity that these Saudi officials, including a good friend of the Bushes, Bandar Bush, Prince Bandar, their involvement in 9/11.
We're going to have to let you go. God bless you. Thanks so very much, Paul.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is a fascinating four-tape set, Genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dunigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America, the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention we do carry this book. It's called Crude Politics. It's an excellent book. I think it's $24.99. We also are going to be carrying Richard Miniter's book, Losing Bin Laden. You need to get these two books. You need to understand that everything you've been told about the war in Iraq just is not true. You've been lied to from the very beginning. Of course, you will certainly want to get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story, which, of course, is the story of all of the wars of the 20th century. And then, of course, we have a syllabus that goes with that. And then we go into the real reason why we went to war, and because it was planned long before September 11th. In fact, September 11th, well, you can even read the publications put out by the Project for the New American Century that published in September of 2000, 12 months before the September 11th attack, where they say, of course, we're not going to be able to transform our military unless there is a new Pearl Harbor. We're not going to be able to do this unless there's a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. And 12 months later, what do you know why we had a new Pearl Harbor? And, of course, if you want to understand the similarity between Pearl Harbor and what happened on September 11th, you'll want to get our September newsletter. We'll be glad to send you a copy of that. It'll be available in a few days. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. What were Donald Rumsfeld doing on September 11th? What was General Meyer, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, what was the president doing that morning when we were on the highest alert anticipating a terrorist attack? And, of course, there was advanced knowledge it was going to be a terrorist attack. So what were they doing that morning, of course, to prepare America and to rally and hold off the attack? We'll be right back. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, are going to carry this book, Crude Politics by Paul Sperry. It's $24.99, and we'll be carrying Richard Miniter's book, and that, of course, is called Losing Bin Laden. Both of these are important books. Then I want to mention, of course, that you can get the books by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you live here in Northern California, I'm going to be speaking on Saturday at the Hilton in Pleasanton. That's where 580 and 680 come together. And it's going to be at 9 o'clock on Saturday. Southwest Radio Church is putting out a program. If you are going to go, if you call Southwest Radio Church ahead of time, why, you can get in for nothing. If you don't know their telephone number, call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WARREN, and you'll be able to get it. I'm going to give my talk, Iraq, the Untold Story. But there will be a number of other speakers. It'll be a good meeting. And Southwest Radio Church certainly is an excellent organization, and I'm very proud to be asked to participate in that. That's this coming Saturday at 9 o'clock in Pleasanton. And, of course, you want more information, give our 1-800-5-HIV-WARREN number, and we'll get you the telephone number to call so you can get in for nothing. And then, of course, we want, of course, to mention, that the Institute of the Constitution, something you can do to help us educate people about this wonderful, wonderful way of life we have, which is built upon our Christian Constitution. How can I say it's Christian? It doesn't even mention Christianity. Are you sure it doesn't mention Christianity in the Constitution? Well, anyway, you need to get the Institute of the Constitution material. You do that by calling 410-760-9068. It will give you the ability to teach others about the history of our nation, and of course why we must work to try to preserve it, because freedom once lost will never be regained. Call them at 410-760-9068. And then, of course, we hope you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com, and you can see all of the various things that we carry there. And, of course, we do carry the Berkey Light and the Berkey Big Berkey water filters. And if you're interested in getting them and you get them through us, you get a four-tape set and or a video that we have produced. So go to our website at radioliberty.com. And, of course, look at those. You can certainly listen to our programs there on the Internet 5 hours a day. You can also, of course, get our archive programs and great programs, and they're archived there for some weeks. So please tell others about our programs. Tell them that they can pull down our newsletters from there for nothing. Although, of course, we hope many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get the newsletter regularly sent to the mail, or even subscribe to the newsletter. But, of course, you can pull it down off the website for nothing. You have our permission to copy it, because we're here to try to get the information out. And then, of course, we do hope that you will tell others about Radio Liberty. You'll tell them about our radio programs. You'll go to your radio station and ask them to pull them down. You'll go to your friends and say, listen to Dr. Stan. Boy, he's got some crazy ideas, but once in a while he's right. He's been telling us all along that General Wesley Clark is going to be running for the Democratic nomination, and he'll probably get it to run against George Bush next year. And why? Well, because he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he's a Rhodes Scholar, and he's the one, of course, that the establishment is pushing. In fact, Bill Clinton is suggesting that he run, and Bill Clinton, as you know, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, they happens to be also a Rhodes Scholar. Isn't that coincidental? Well, then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because, of course, if we don't have revival in America, why, God will never again bless this country. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.